Hello, Mzansi. You are listening to the world's best podcast presented by WANEFRA Digital Media Awards, Food for Mzansi's Farmers Inside Track. I'm your host, Patricia Tembo. Welcome to episode 428. On today's podcast, we're tackling a significant issue that affects farmers in South Africa. We'll be discussing veld fires, as well as tips and guidelines in preventing them. This episode is said to be both informative and practical. We welcome Dale Norkia, who is an extensively experienced wildfire consultant manager at Winelands Fire Protection Association. He will be sharing with us his expertise in the topic of veld fires.
Dale Norkia, thank you so much for joining us on Farmers Inside Track. Introduce yourself to our audience, describe your scope of work and who you are.
So I'm the manager of the Winelands Fire Protection Association, which is situated in the Cape Winelands district down in the Western Cape. That's my, call it, day job. But I'm also the chairperson of the National Veld Fire Advisory Forum, which covers all the umbrella fire protection associations in South Africa.
Last week, Free State Agriculture released a statement warning farmers just to be prepared for veld fire season. So what responsibilities, from your perspective, do farmers have during veld fires?
There is legislation in place, which is referred to as the National Veld Fire Act, which covers various aspects. The act has been recently amended, but the fundamentals remain exactly the same. In simple terms, there are certain sections of the act that need to be complied with by all landowners on whose property a fire may start and or spread in terms of the act. And there are certain obligations by those landowners that they need to do. So in simple terms, they have to, for example, what is referred to as Chapter 4 of the act, all persons that fall into that category, in other words, on whose property a fire may start and or spread, need to have certain things in place. And the main one being from Chapter 4 is having fire breaks in place on their boundaries, which will help to prevent fires spreading from their property to other properties. But that also then applies, obviously, to the neighboring properties. They also have to have the same thing in place. In terms of Chapter 5 of the Act, applying again the fact where people have that risk, and the landowner has an obligation to have adequate personnel trained for veld fire firefighting, as well as equipment, in order to try and either extinguish or prevent a fire that does start on their property from spreading to other persons' properties as well. There are fire protection associations throughout the country. They may not cover the total landmass of South Africa, but there are certainly a large number of them throughout the country. And joining those fire protection associations is advised. It's not compulsory. So you still have freedom of association as per the constitution. However, it is advisable to join fire protection associations as they provide certain rules and guidelines which are taken into account if there are any problems when it comes to fires, damages caused, etc. And then there's the two sides to that as well, which is obviously the criminal side in terms of the act, where your compliance will be checked, etc., if it should go to court. Then secondly is obviously the civil actions that could occur when it comes to claiming for damages, etc. So that's in essence basically where we stand as fire protection associations throughout the country.
So it is important then for farmers to familiarize themselves with this legislation so they comply and, you know, not find themselves in trouble.
That's correct. As I mentioned early on, all the fire protection associations throughout the country, they have their own rules, regulations and guidelines that they set up for themselves. And as I say, that will then be used as the practice or the norm should something occur.
You mentioned firebreakers early on. Could you explain what that would entail and how a farmer could implement that on their land?
There are a number of different methods that can be used to construct firebreaks. So again, depending on the vegetation, etc., in the various areas and the farming practices, some examples of that could be that you can burn firebreaks on your boundaries in consultation and working together with your neighbors. So that would typically occur in areas like grassland areas, etc., or grazing areas. So firebreaks that are burnt are normally the easiest way to do that. Could be through using graders, etc., where you remove all the vegetation from the surface of the ground, and that can double up as roads, etc., for access purposes. Another way could be through disking or plowing of fire breaks. Again, that will depend on the area and if it can be done. And then lastly, in certain areas where it's very sensitive, the landscape, to either soil erosion, etc., which we're not allowed to make fire breaks where there is a chance of soil erosion occurring, then you could use things like slashes or brush cutters, etc., and just cut the fire breaks and keep the vegetation low, which then can be used as a point from which to try and control that fire. So depending on the area, depending on the rules, etc., and the sensitivities of the area, you've got to take quite a few things into account on how you can make your fire breaks. But generally, again, the fire protection associations will be able to guide you in that respect.
Still on fire breakers, so the main purpose is just to prevent fires from spreading onto the surrounding area, the surrounding land, correct?
Yes.
Right.
It's one of the things, yeah.
Perhaps expand on what the other purpose of fire breakers would be.
As I said earlier, that in the event of a fire actually occurring, these fire breaks could be used to gain access to the area. And secondly, if you need to do what we refer to as controlled burning, in other words, where you manage the fires for purposes of felt management, biodiversity, etc. Fire is an ecology, or the most of our vegetation are fire-driven ecologies, and they has to be used in order to maintain biodiversity, etc., and for good felt management in terms of grazing, etc. So all those things can be done through utilization of the fire breaks and that as well. So it can double up for that purpose as well.
So on farms, you usually find that from cultivation practices, there's like debris, loose tree leaves and trunks or dead plant material. Like, it is advised for farmers to remove that to prevent wildfires occurring. But what else would you advise farmers to look out for that could, you know, possibly become fuel for fire?
So obviously, vegetation, or as we refer to it as fuel load management, is critical. And there are a number of ways of managing that. As I say, burning is one of the methods, but it can be through other methods of removing that vegetation, etc. So you can either chip it or physically remove it to another site, etc. That's in terms of the vegetation side of things. And then obviously, good housekeeping, especially around buildings and infrastructure. There you also should keep the place relatively clear and clean so that if a fire should occur, it doesn't cause damage to buildings, etc. And again, it goes around housekeeping, and there's a lot of information. Normally, you can be supplied through your FBAs, but generally online and everything, you can find out how to, what we call, fireproof your property.
With regard to buildings and infrastructure, is there certain materials advised to use for animal shelter and housing that would be more fire resistant than other materials?
Generally, your buildings and that, unless they're made from wood, etc., most of them are fairly resistant to fire. But in certain areas where there's like thatch housing or wooden housing, wooden sheds, etc., that's important to clear around those places quite thoroughly. And then obviously, even your normal brick structures, etc., there's certain housekeeping things that should be done in terms of vegetation management and storage of flammable materials close to the buildings. And some of this could include things like ensuring before the fire season that your gutters, for example, if you have gutters on the roof for rain, etc., that these are kept clean, as very often embers that are thrown by fires, especially in windy conditions, those embers fall into the gutters, starts the fire there, and then it gets in under the rafters and into your roof, and then your building basically catches a light. And then obviously, in terms of storing flammable things, things like gas bottles or firewood or anything like that, it's advisable to keep that stuff in a safe place, and then also to ensure that there's no risk of the fire reaching it in terms of a fell fire getting to that flammable material. And then obviously also just generally awareness around your house, etc., as well. And then obviously having safe areas in terms of your cattle and so on, should a fire occur, being able to get them moved to a safe area wherever possible, and livestock as well as your, obviously your livelihoods. So your vineyards, your orchards, etc., to keep them relatively clean and free from dead material wherever possible. So that also helps to reduce the risk of the spread of fire.
So these safe areas or safe zones, would that be like a clearing of land? What would you consider a safe zone?
Let's take grasslands again, for example, where you've got grazing and felt and so on. Having certain areas burnt out which could be part of your whole biodiversity plan, etc., where every year, normally around this time for the winter fire season areas, in other words, the summer rainfall areas, if you burn a certain area out within your property that can be used should a fire occur, you can take your livestock to, etc., then that would obviously be typically a safer spot for them than just out in the normal veld. That's one of the ways of dealing with it.
In your experience, have you found that a fire had been ignited from poorly maintained equipment and machinery? What would your advice be if that is something that has occurred or does occur?
There are numerous. There's lots of different things. Some of the most common ones in terms of natural fires occurring would typically be from lightning strikes, etc., that especially in the mountainous areas that occurs. Most of the other fires are anthropogenic, in other words, caused by some intervention of people. So whether that be deliberate or accidental, people start fires, whether it be through poor burning practices, cooking practices, etc., windy conditions, typically dry and windy conditions, fires can then start and obviously spread. Another major one that's coming into play more and more now with the extreme weather conditions is poorly maintained electrical distribution lines, etc. In other words, your Eskom electricity lines. If they're not maintained well, then obviously these can either break off the poles, and then that obviously causes arcing and shorting, which then starts fires. Same as if the lines are not maintained and kept tight. In high windy conditions, the lines can touch each other, spark, and that can obviously also cause ignition of fires. And then obviously also deliberate fires that are started from an arson point of view. People will deliberately start fires.
Thank you so much. Yeah, no, we're very grateful to have your expertise on the podcast. Is there anything else perhaps that you have found in your experience and calls that you've had that might be surprising to our farmers or things that they haven't considered? Like you did mention clearing the gutter of any material.
Certainly from our point of view, I don't have any problem at all in terms of if they would like to go onto our website. It describes everything there in terms of prevention, etc., that can be done by landowners and so on where there is that risk of fire. But then obviously it's around awareness and everything else. So speaking to all your staff, etc., making sure that they are aware of the risks of wildfires and the causes and etc. You know, so don't go smoking and throwing your stompies around. Don't go make warming fires out in the open and leave them unattended, etc. All these are little things that can be done to help prevent fires. And then obviously if a fire does occur, or if you see smoke or whatever in the area, to report it through the various platforms that are out there. So either to your fire services, if you have one, or to the Fire Protection Association, who've got contact numbers in the area, and obviously the neighbors and stuff around you, so that, you know, everyone can, as a community, help to try and extinguish that fire and prevent it becoming catastrophic, etc. Our website is obviously www.winelandsfpa.co.za. And that's also got all the information, which most of the other FPAs have as well. So it's all available online.
Thank you so much to Dale Norkia from Winelands Fire Protection Association for sharing his insights and knowledge with us on today's podcast. And that's a wrap. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platforms. From me, Patricia Tembo, our technical producer, Megan van den Vint, and the rest of hashtag Team Food for Mzansi, thank you for listening.
Life in South Africa can be a lot. I mean, scroll through Twitter for a minute and tell me I'm wrong. Thank God for South Africans though, right? We're inspiring, and even on the bad days, we fight back with a smile. That's why I love Food for Mzansi so much. They're not ashamed to celebrate the ordinary unsung heroes who work every day to put food on our nation's tables. Go to foodformzanzi.co.za and never miss an inspiring story.